the show.
Hey everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of The Boundless Show. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson. This week's show is sponsored by Cedarville University out there in Ohio. Cedarville is a Christian liberal arts college, and a good one, I think. My friend Julie went there and had a great education and is quite a smart girl. So I'm just going to say that Cedarville does some great things. So we thank them for their sponsorship of today's show. You can find out more about Cedarville at cedarville.edu. We've just got a full house today, mixing it up with Ted, Steve, Sarah, and myself.
Hey, hi, Lisa.
Hey.
All right. Well, they have already given me the appropriate well wishes for having just come out of sinus surgery. I appreciate them. They were a little bit late, but I'm just saying, could you people please at least follow my Facebook page?
Now, when you say sinus surgery, that's not rhinoplasty.
No. As in like a nose job?
Well, I just like rhino.
After this, though, who knows? I may need to get one.
Oh, no, you have a great nose, so you don't need one.
Oh, thanks. Okay. Well, I was a little nervous because I was like, seriously, what is going up in there and what is going to come out of there? Because it was very concerning. I had, long story short, I will tell this quickly. In September, I thought I had allergies for literally like the last 6 years. Just never did anything about them. September went, had the whole allergy panel done. They're like, you have no allergies, which apparently is quite rare. And I was very pleased with that. But I still had a problem.
Wow.
Exactly. So they did a CT and said, you have a chronic sinus infection.
Oh my goodness.
And we're guessing you probably had it more than 3 years.
Ah.
So they started me on antibiotics. I did those for 4 months, 3 different rounds, to no avail. And so I went in Thursday for surgery. And they opened up my little front sinuses. There was one in the back that had infection in it. And then they removed my adenoids, which they should have removed when I had my tonsils out, but they didn't. So obviously they just needed the money, and so they had to double book it and just go twice. So
do you get to keep these things that they brought out? Or
no,
are they in the
but that would have
somewhere?
Been awesome. I was hoping I could, and then we could put it as part of a blog post.
Mm-hmm.
But
oh, yeah.
No, they wouldn't give me anything. So okay. It was very interesting because I came, you know, you all heard my shout out from NRB. I came back from NRB with bronchitis, which just about did me in. And when I showed up for surgery, the anesthesiologist was like, I don't think we can even operate on you because your lungs are too sketchy. So that was awesome because I'm sitting there in a gown, like ready to go into surgery. And then finally my doc comes in looking like he'd climbed Pike's Peak. And he's like, hey, we're ready to go. And I was like, are we doing this? And he's like, sure, let's just do it. So they put an IV in me and I just about pass out because I had not had liquids for more than 24 hours. People, when you schedule your surgeries, please do them first thing in the morning. I'm just saying, that's a little tip. So that was bad. Go in, get the surgery done. That was fine. Although I show up in the OR and the nurse is like, did you all know that we're doing an adenoidectomy here? Because it's on the chart and
that's
I don't
comforting.
Have any. Yeah. And one guy's like, no, we don't even have the tools for that. And so then, you know, next thing I know, I'm like put out and this is my comfort to go into this. Come out of surgery, was feeling some pain in my throat. They gave me cocaine, which was awesome.
Hello.
I'm going to say that within 10 seconds, it solved all of my problems.
Oh, hey.
So I actually asked, I couldn't believe she gave me cocaine. And so I asked the nurse, I said, did you just say you gave me cocaine? And she's like, yeah. And I'm like, that is awesome.
She didn't say codeine.
No. That's what I thought she might have said. So I asked for clarification,
cocaine.
And it was cocaine.
Did she sing it like Eric Clapton would?
She did not. Although, as my friend Amy said, the medical term is actually blow. So, anyway, so that was awesome. And I've been recuperating and feeling pretty good. Though today I had my follow-up and had to get some, I think this is normal, but they had to just go in there and like get some stuff out. Okay. I didn't have it packed.
Like a Roto-Rooter type thing?
There was some Roto-Rootering. There were some forceps involved.
Ooh.
There was some suction. There were many tears. And let's just say that there were many prayers lifted up to the throne in that process. But he did tell me that's my worst appointment to expect. So after this, it gets better and I should be breathing more easily. So.
Well, we have to admit we dropped the ball, Lisa. We did not surround.
They dropped the ball, folks.
Lisa with love and care and help and follow up.
Well, you know what they say, you can pick your nose and you can pick your physicians and your physician can what? Pick your
nose. Wait a second.
It.
Because that is helpful.
But where are your friends after you've had surgery?
Yes. Well, fortunately, I do have some real friends who came and stayed with me. Not from the Boundless Show, but no, what my friend Amy actually stayed with me the first night because I had to be supervised. And that went well, though I told her, I said, this is true friendship. I'm sitting here with gauze as my nose is bleeding because I bled for like 12 hours afterwards. Wow. And I was eating a bowl of cold baked beans. And so I don't know if that was prompted by just some kind of delusionary state I was in or what. But she said, actually, I said, so you're a true friend. And she said, actually, the beans concern me more than the bloody nose, if we're being honest. So, but yeah, I just recouped. And it is weird, though, because I... You know, you kind of have that awkward, like, putting out the shout. I had to have someone drive me to surgery and stay with me and pick me up. And my sister did that, bless her heart. Though I'm not sure she was the best candidate because she does not remember a thing that the doctor told her when he did. I'm like, you're supposed to be retaining this. So she didn't know a thing. But anyway, so she helped. And then I had friends that definitely helped and brought a couple meals and stuff like that. So that was cool. But it is hard, and we were going to throw this out and just talk about it. It's hard as a single person to ask for help. Maybe it's hard as any person to ask for help, really. Yeah. I mean, I don't know.
Or even to know how to help somebody else when they say they're going to be doing something, to know exactly.
Right.
Other than I'm praying for you, let me know if there's anything I can do, to actually specifically volunteer something so there's greater likelihood that it'll happen.
Right. And I had many friends who said, you know, what can I do? What can I do to help? Like, even on the front end, and I'm just like, I don't know. But at the same time, I'm like a total control freak. So before I went to surgery, I had to clean my whole house. I had to change my bed. Then my friend Amy was staying with me, so I had to change that bed in the guest room and have it all ready, like with it just like folded over, like ready for her to sleep.
With the mint on the bed.
I didn't have a mint, so which quite frankly, I chastised myself for. But so I had to have the whole room ready and stuff like that. And I'm like, what am I doing operating a B&B here? I'm sure. But I mean, she was great in just saying, you know, I'm just going to show up and whatever we need to do. And she bought me a shake on the way home.
See, that's great.
Which was fun. But I think it's hard. I mean,
so why is it that the first thing that comes to my mind is maybe providing meals? Is it, like, my wife and I have done that for families after they have babies or after they've had some kind of surgery. We either initiate, you know, coordinating a group of people to bring
Like our assistant is about to have foot surgery this week, and definitely hard for her to be up on her feet and making meals. So, mm-hmm. I mean, anytime you're incapacitated from meal making, that seems to be a help.
Well, and definitely for families, I think that's huge, because you're still going to have all your kids that need to be fed, you know. Like for me, that wasn't as big an issue, even though my friend Diane made an awesome... Maybe I need to blog about this, an awesome shepherd's pie. And then she came over and ate with me one night. So that was really fun. But otherwise, I could just do like soup or just do whatever. You know, it wasn't a big deal. For me, it was definitely just, you know, knowing I needed to have someone check in on me and, you know, all that kind of stuff. But I think that's a great way. You know, we talked last week about babysitting help and stuff. That's another great way we can get involved in the life of our church, is helping out, whether it's families or singles or widows or whatever, with, you know, surgery-related or crisis-related stuff when it comes down to it.
Well, I think single people do face a dilemma, especially those off in college that are away from their families. If they have a medical emergency, you know, they need someone who can help them, maybe drive them to the hospital or pick them up. And so that is something that singles need.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, you know, it's a reminder, we talk about, we're right in the middle of all these debates about healthcare reform and who needs to be taking care of what services and all that. And it's just a reminder that, you know, there's never a place you're going to get to where money solves all the problems. You're always going to have issues where you need people. And
that's right.
It's even a reminder that, you know, all these different debates about, okay, if you've got all these friends on Facebook, how many can you really count on in a situation you know, like this? Are they really the kind of friends?
I can count on all of mine, FYI, except for the Boundless team.
Well, I think that is a problem, too. Sometimes people may offer to help, but you're not sure if they really mean it. And if you call them up on it, are they going to be kind of put out like, well, I didn't really mean it. I was just saying that to be nice. So it's hard to tell sometimes with people.
Yeah, it's probably best just to err on the side of helping somebody, even if you end up being awkward about it.
Yeah.
You know, we just need to err on the side of laying our lives down.
Yeah. And to err on the side of being willing to let people into your life and help you. Because I often say this too, and this is not necessarily surgery related, but I say that by me refusing help, I am refusing someone the opportunity to bless someone else and to serve. And that is important. And I shouldn't step in the way of that happening. I think that's important. I have, you know, a good example of this is I'm planning a coworker's shower this Saturday at my home. didn't quite plan this out too well, but
this is a like a
baby shower.
Okay, not like a clean your body kind of shower.
No, no, we're having one of those right. the following week at my place, possibly. No, baby shower, and so you know that's a lot of people. It's food, it's games, it's decor, it's all this kind of stuff. And I was, you know, just getting RSVPs, and one of the girls was like, "Is there anything I can help with?" And my first instinct is, "Oh no, I've totally got it covered. You know, whatever, don't worry about it." And part of me is, you know, I'm a control freak, and I'm like, this, you know, I'm not going to let you do anything unless you're going to do it well, quite frankly. But finally, I'm just like, yeah, seriously, why don't you bring something? What do you want to do? Do you want to make punch? Do you want to bring, like, muffins or something like that? So she is. And that's I was good. Like, you know what? You got to let people step
in. And there's
in
a camaraderie, too. You know, you build your friendship, your relationship when you're helping out side by side.
Exactly, and it gives them a sense of feeling like a part of it.
I do want to say, though, that it is nice that when you plan your parties, it's not mandatory for people to bring things, because I've been invited to a lot of parties where you're supposed to bring money or you're supposed to bring food. And, and so I, on the other hand, when I have parties, I'm like, I don't want people to have to bring anything.
Yeah.
You know, if they want to, that's good, but I don't want to make it mandatory.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, that's a whole other show. That is seriously like the, hey, yeah, I was wondering if you wanted to come over for dinner and could you possibly bring the main dish? That is just called using people to feed yourself. Oh, yeah. Okay. So, well, awesome. Well, I will, the next time I have surgery, which I don't know, maybe next week, who knows, but we're going to be on top of it with your assistant this time around.
We'll be there in the room with you.
We'll be
reminding them to do the adenoidectomy or whatever it's called.
Please do. Advocate on my behalf, or at least have them play some good tunes while they're working. That'd be great. So, well, awesome, you guys. Every time I try to go it alone, I get shut down, locked up and held captive in the clutches of my doubt. We go back, we go forth, we go back. I'm sick with vertigo, weary of my ways, my days, my ebbs and flows. So I wanna feel a new day. There's gotta be more than this. There's gotta be more. I wanna feel a new day. There's gotta be more than this. There's just gotta be more. Right here, right now, under the stars, I promise you my heart, 'cause it starts tonight. Well, hey, everyone, for this week's culture segment, I am joined by Toby Mack. Hey, Toby Mack.
What's happening?
I'm assuming you're in Nashville, right?
I am. I'm at my studio in Nashville. Actually, Franklin, Tennessee, just outside of Nashville.
Right. Because who isn't from Franklin? I mean, honestly. Except
exactly.
For maybe Casting Crowns and Third Day. I don't know. A few people.
Casting Crowns, Third Day, and I guess Tomlin. And those guys moved from Austin to Atlanta, so all those guys are now gathered up in Atlanta. So.
Oh, okay. Well, and I already apologized for my voice to you. I'm so sorry about that. We're going to just plug on ahead. It reminds me of like when I was in junior high and the girls who had no singing voices would try to sing like Sandy Patty's We Shall Behold Him, and then they would just be like, oh, I'm so sorry, but I have a cold, but really they just didn't have good voices.
Well, I know exactly how you feel because I've been on my last leg vocally many, many times.
Oh, okay. But
hanging on by a thread, you know, in the middle of trying to sing some big note, and I already can't do it, but to add insult to injury, my voice is shot, so, you know.
Well, you know, and that's when you just start rapping, quite frankly.
Exactly.
That's rapping, what I say.
Handing it off to an incredible background singer.
And that's, yeah. See, that's why I could never sing like Sandy Patty, so that's why I just started my rap hip-hop career instead.
That'll work.
FYI, you haven't invited me to sing with you, but I'm just saying that may happen in the future.
Absolutely. We can turn the corner.
Very cool. So, well, I want to make sure that everyone knows to find you at TobyMack.com, which your website is actually kind of relaunching now, isn't it?
Actually relaunched today. I think they have some question waiting for me in my email saying, can we do this? Is this okay? Like some picture. They're like, are we okay with this one? Because we're waiting for you. I'm like, oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, well, that's okay. We'll forgive you for that. We'll let people just find their way there and figure out what to do when they get there. Obviously, I mean, many of you folks know, and I'll just say this by way of introduction, Toby Mac used to be part of DC Talk back in the day, back when he was BFFs with Jerry Falwell and beyond. And you guys obviously were well known as that group and had a few little iterations of yourselves even in that group. And then you left and since have had six number one CHR hits. You've had, what, three albums so far, not counting the live one?
Yeah, three. So tonight will be my fourth.
Okay. So that is great. And obviously, like you just said, the new one comes out next Tuesday. And I want to just start out by asking you a little bit, what can I call you for short? I just feel like I'm calling you
Toby. Call me Toby.
Just call you Toby? Okay.
Yeah.
Can I just call you T? Because sometimes I like just making up names.
You can call me T. You can call me dude.
Okay.
Or guy, whatever.
Okay. Just heir of the promise. No, I won't call you that. That's just weird. Okay. Anyway, so I want to talk a little bit about, I just mentioned when you were with DC Talk, you guys were, you know, started out kind of as rappers, and then you had your rock album in Jesus Freak, and then you kind of went back, and then you went on your own and stuff. What, like, how has that all come about? Talk about just musically, like, where you've been and where you are right now, and what really kind of fuels what you write as you kind of go along.
Well, I mean, with DC Talk, it was, you know, like a three-headed monster. It was like, you know, sort of, we each came from sort of a different, Kevin sort of sang this Euro pop rock voice, Michael sort of sang this soulful rock thing, and I was a rapper, gone singer, sort of, you know, so it was sort of making music that lended itself to what our voices and supported whatever we were saying. You know, whatever lyrically I was writing, I would just create some music that worked with it, and I had these amazing vocalists at my right and left that could pull off anything. And then, of course, you know, we began to venture into rock and roll a little more, came out of hip-hop, and then when we, Jesus Freak to me was sort of this record that sort of blended rock and roll with hip-hop, and it was, that's a little more common today, but then it was very unique to be rapping over these guitar riffs, and then having this amazing sort of soaring vocal in the chorus, because Michael and Kevin can sing so good. And then we went into Supernatural, which was a little more of a rock-pop record. And then it's kind of like we all said, let's climb new mountains. Let's go separate ways and climb new mountains. We always thought it would just be a record or two, and then we'd come back together quickly. But, you know, once you start up a hill and you get out halfway up, but you don't want to turn around. I just, personally, I'm sure they feel the same way, but I just wanted to keep climbing. I have a new band, the Diverse City Band. We've been together for, you know, 8 years now. We love each other. It's family. Literally passionate about it, each one of us. We have a vision for it, and we're climbing this mountain together. And so it's and I sort of dipped back into hip-hop, sort of hip-hop meets guitars, as I call it, urban rock, whatever one wants to call it.
Yeah, okay. Now, and you're obviously in your style and your sound and your lyrics, you're constantly evolving, and I'm assuming that you write out of what you're experiencing and what God's showing you at that time. But I do want to say, first of all, I mean, you're, okay, I mean, let's be honest here. You're like in your 40s now, right?
Yeah.
Okay, because I remember like in the 80s, I mean, which I can barely even remember at this point. I mean, I feel like I'm just aging by day as well. But so you kind of were with these guys and stuff. I mean, did you, when you started out, were you just like, I'm going to be doing this for the rest of my life? Or do you kind of approach each project as like, okay, come on now, you know, Lord, what do you have to say through me in this?
Well, you hit it on the head. I mean, when I first did this, I got a business/political science degree from Liberty University, signed a record deal, and, you know, told my dad, you know, hey, my dad was in real estate in the D.C. area where I grew up, and I said, Dad, you know, I'm going to sign this record deal, probably go to Nashville for a couple years and be back to do real estate with you. And, you know, just started walking down this road, you know, never knowing what tomorrow held for sure. And each record, you know, I walk in and I say that exact prayer, what you said, it's perfect. I just said, all right, God, hollow me, of all my junk. Breathe something through me that will connect with people's lives, that will resonate with people, that will cause people to think, that will cause people to want to discover you or walk more deeply with you. And he just continues to give me songs. And, I mean, that's really what it comes down to. You can have all the bells and whistles you want. You can have all the craziest show you want to have and, you know, whatever you want to do. But the bottom line is, if he's not breathing songs to you that are resonating with people's lives, you can't do this for very long. So I just stand and honestly, I'm not saying this in a weird kind of way. I'm just stand back, humbled by the fact that he continues to breathe songs through me, and I'm just kind of amazed by it all.
Yeah. Do you feel you have to kind of study where the culture is today and really the, you know, the millennials who are now listening to your music and even younger, you know, even kids and stuff? Because, I mean, honestly, you know, you were at Liberty and even on the front end of your career, you weren't texting people and getting in all this craziness and whatever. I mean, do you just have some days where you're like, who in the world are these people that are listening to this message and song?
Yeah, I do. I stay pretty aware of who my audience is and what they're getting out of my music. I'm kind of a workhorse. I mean, I'm kind of a perfectionist, and you know, I don't kind of sit back on my creative laurels. I mean, I'm always working, always trying to open my mind to what's moving people, and relying on God to breathe that stuff through me, but also studying culture and watching people. And, you know, the label oftentimes, EMI oftentimes says, you know, they're like, how do you think we should market this record? Because, you know your audience better than anyone in this building. And they give me a lot of leeway there. And that's a very fortunate position, a very blessed position, a privileged position where they lean on me for who my audience is, and they look for my lead. And I'm blessed to have a label like that where I can go in and not sit on the opposite side of the table and, you know, be in this agitated position, but I can inspire them to go out and reach people with my music.
Mm, that's cool. Well, I know in the past you've talked some, and certainly in this new album you do as well, because I've been looking through some of the lyrics. You talk a lot about brokenness and about sin and about the state of our culture and the world and just a life apart from Christ. Which is awesome, quite frankly. But you're trying to infuse that also with hope. And I'm just wondering, what really have you seen as far as that, basically, that's driving you to write these lyrics? And, you know, I mean, some people, I guess, would look at it and say, man, he's just so down on everything about who we are as humans and whatever. But what do you see, or what have you experienced even in recent years that really drove you to kind of put that kind of stuff on paper?
Well, I mean, I can't. I don't seem to get out of the fight. I mean, any of these people that sort of say they have it all together and they've had it all together for quite a while, you know, that's amazing to me, because it just doesn't seem to be. I mean, I'm a person that people look at me and they think I have it all together. Like, you know, Toby really dots the I's and crosses the T's, when really I'm in this constant fight, you know, where I'm being barraged and just hit across the head with, look after yourself, think about yourself, take care of yourself. You know, the whole world is telling me to be self-absorbed, and I'm constantly fighting it, trying to be others-absorbed. And some days I win, and some days I lose. And you know, I want to work hard and tour my records, and you know, go out and do press and stuff. But at the same time, I write in the song "Lose My Soul." I want to be a daddy who's in the mix. I have 5 kids. I don't want to be that dad that was always gone. How can you not think of that as a fight? I've never thought of it as not a fight. It's hard. But I also, you know, in the middle of all that comes God's grace, and I kind of rest in that some days. But most days it's just a massive fight to be the man that I want to be.
Hmm. Would you say, I mean, in the last, you know, 10 years or so, that's really been your biggest struggle, or?
Well, I just don't know how it can be everybody's struggle. I mean, I maybe there's some alternative thing I'm not aware of, but, I mean, I believe, you know, I believe I'm a Christian person. I believe the Holy Spirit enables me at times to exude love, joy, peace, long-suffering, gentleness, faith, meekness, temperance, but I don't always have those things. I don't always feel those things. And anybody that can do that all the time, please make me aware of what you have. But I think it's constantly a battle, and I'm not gonna sit here and act like I have it all together. You know, when I write songs about my struggle, I assume everybody's going through that. And I have to say that just the way people react to my songs, I think they're facing the same things I am. I don't think I'm any different than they are. And sometimes I write about things my friends are going through when they allow me to. You know, the song Get Back Up, which will be the second single that follows the current single, City on Her Knees. It's about one of my friends that, you know, made some really bad choices and lost his marriage, lost his family, and really, quite frankly, felt absolutely worthless. And, you know, I wrote that song for him, you know. We lose our way, we get back up again. It's never too late to get back up again. You may be knocked down, but you're not out forever. And the last part of the song is, this is love calling out to the broken. This is love calling. And I want him to know I'm not sitting in judgment of him. I'm love calling out to him, and God is calling out to him with love. He's not worthless. He has so much to offer.
Yeah. I think it's, you know, as I think about that, I remember my 20s and just feeling very, I think my whole life was very idyllic for some reason. And I grew up in a very strong Christian home and whatever. But I've noticed that, you know, in recent years, especially really stepping into relationship with people and really entering the messiness of what that looks like, as well as just the messiness of taking on other people's sin and brokenness and stuff. I was just telling a friend the other day, I mean, I've gotten into the practice of having to literally stop in the middle of conversations with friends now and say, we need to pray about this, because I feel like I have so many friends and myself as well going through stuff, whether it's stuff that's been brought on by our own sin, or whether it's been stuff in the world, or whether it's illness, or whether it's just brokenness in relationships. And I think that the more, you know, we've been in the habit, and I felt like this back in a previous, you know, when I was, I don't know, younger, whatever, felt like I was constantly trying to just move myself toward comfort, you know, like what you were saying earlier, just trying to build hedges around myself and protect myself and whatever. And I don't think that that is really ultimately glorifying in the name of Christ, nor is it really realistic.
I agree with you. And I think I probably grew up a lot like you. You know, I definitely thought, you know, it was just kind of easy street for quite a while there, and I don't understand why people don't have it all together, but, you know, life starts hitting, and, you know, things start changing, and I haven't gone through any, I mean, most people would say I live a very blessed life, and I haven't really had to face any massive tragedy, but I'm walking with people through some things that are absolutely devastating, and I have definitely had a few injections of my own that you know, life injections, I'm saying. I want to straighten that out right now. life injections, you know, things that I just never expected to see or feel or taste that you just kind of wonder why, you know. I think that to recognize, I've always been a guy that definitely recognizes whatever I have to face, I absolutely believe I'm in God's hand. And thank God that is absolutely my foundation. It's the intimate part, the intimacies of it all that I struggle with. It's not the foundational big faith things. Like those, the big muscles are there for me. I know I'm in God's hands. I trust him. But it's the intimacy, trying to get in there and get intimate with God. That's where sometimes I have my struggles.
Yeah. Just one little turn I want to take here, Toby. When, you know, we're big fans of family here at the Boundless Show, and of course most of our demographic is younger. We're young adults, many of us single, but we're trying to move people toward marriage and a healthy continuum and what that looks like. Did you ever say, I mean, because you were married at a relatively young age and now you have 5 kids and you adopted 2 of them, and have you ever had those moments of crisis where you've kind of sat there and said, wow, can I do both of these things? I mean, can I do family well, and can I do music well and ministry well? And I think, and one thing I want you to address in that is especially for men, like the whole idea of, and I've been in a couple conversations like this recently, the whole idea of what it looks like to dream big dreams and to live an adventure, but at the same time shoulder responsibility, especially when it comes to being a husband and a father. How did you make that? How did you kind of marry that dynamic of really, I want to do what God's called me to do, get involved in the fight, be passionate about this, be good at it, but also know what it's like to enter manhood in a way that shoulders responsibility, including providing, protecting, having a wife, having a family. What does all that look like for you?
Well, I don't think it was a grand scheme or a plan or a strategy. I think it sort of came at me like the undertow, you know what I mean? Like a tsunami on its way, but I didn't see it coming. In other words, I think it, you know, I got married to my wife, and it was great, and we had one child, and there was a lot of pressure there because I was just very driven from a career perspective, and driven as far as a ministry perspective, without a doubt. I mean, I want to share my music with people because I think it ultimately shares truth with people. But I didn't foresee 5 kids. I didn't foresee adopting the twins. It came at a beautiful time in our lives, and it was a beautiful thing. It was an absolute God thing. And then we had 2 birth children right after that. So all of a sudden we look up and we have 5 children. It wasn't like a strategy, and it wasn't like a plan to. But what did become a strategy was how do we do this? And I began to take it one day at a time and just sort of feel it out. But I was losing until I made a plan. Mm-hmm. And then the plan became, you know, simple, small things. It wasn't this macro, massive decision. It was, okay, from now on, I'm recording till 6:30. At 6:45, I walk in the door, and we have dinner together as a family. We share about the best part of our day. Everyone goes around the table and tells something that no one else knows happened to them that day. And then after that, we pray, and I go up. I do the dishes. My daughter Marley clears the table. Moses puts the dishes in the dishwasher. Amanda runs the vacuum. I mean, we have jobs. We play music and we clean the house together. Then we go upstairs and I bathe them and I read them a story and I sing a worship song with them and then I pray with them. That happens at my house every night that I'm in town. I used to record till midnight. Now I record till 6:30 and I walk out the door. And I told all the people I work with that that's what's going to happen in my life. And I'm not bragging on. This is my wife and I deciding how are we going to deal with this. How are we going to deal with being a recording artist on the road and in the studio till all hours? And it was just those kind of decisions that actually your life begins to reflect something different than a normal recording artist. And I'm thankful.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Does that answer your question at all?
Yeah, no, that's great. That's good. I mean, and it's it because it's just it's hard to believe, I think, sometimes for those of us who, you know, work normal jobs. You know, we just think that all these Christian artists are just living these amazing lives, and how can they even be normal, and how can they, you know, fit in? Because I think there's that pull, and I think that it's almost a kind of an insidious thing that's been told to us in the church. I think that there has to be this amazing calling and this amazing ministry, and sometimes God just calls us to a normalcy, you know, and living life and doing it well and living it in relationship with people, whether that's with our own families eventually or whatever. So I think it's good that, you know, you kind of evidence that balance in what you were just saying there.
Yeah, and also our friends, you know, like, you didn't even ask for this, but I want to give it to you based on your last question. It is our friends that either inspire us to live well or literally drag us down. And I know that sounds like Christian cliche, whatever, but my friends absolutely inspire me to be a better man. They inspire me to want to live more passionately, walk more deeply in pursuit of holiness. But I know so many of my other friends that have friends that just pull them down into a jaded, cynical, thing where they're influenced to go out every night versus go home every night. They're influenced to be jaded about other people's music versus to look at it as different parts of the body. And I can't emphasize enough, if you want to talk about family and stepping up and being a man or a woman of God, it's our friends that affect us more than anything else.
And the friends that we choose make a big difference in that.
Absolutely.
And the ones that are committed to Christian community and committed to, you know, we talk about that a lot here at Boundless as well, the importance of being committed to a local body of believers and, you know, not trying to just fly solo in so many things as we try to, it seems.
Mm-hmm.
But that's good. Okay, well, we're going to go ahead and wrap it up here. We didn't get to talk much about the album, but again, I want to say it's tonight. Your current single, as you alluded to, is City on Our Knees, which when I first heard it, I thought it was Newsboys. Are you getting that a lot? I was just like, this can't be Toby Mac. I think it's Newsboys. So
I've never gotten that, but I'll take that as a compliment because I think, honestly, I think Peter Furler is an incredible writer of music. Like, I love his choruses and think they tend to move me, so I'll take that as a compliment.
Well, our engineer Dave actually got in an argument with his son over it because Dave was convinced it was Newsboys, and his son is like, no, Dad, it's Toby Mac. So that was just pretty funny. But, you know, Dave, he's old, so whatever. Okay, he's not that old. Okay. So that's cool. And you're actually going to be touring now beginning in March. Tell us a little bit about that, the tour with Skillet.
Going out with Skillet, which I think is one of the most intense bands out there. Live and on their CDs, you know, they have, they're just absolute dripping with intensity. I mean, not only will they leave the stage soaking wet with sweat, but they'll leave with fire shooting everywhere. They tour with pyro. Their songs are about an intense culture, and they really, it seems like their songs are always reaching out to hurting. So we have that in common. Theirs seems a little more desperate to me, like, almost like, you know, they're talking about cutting and stuff like that, whereas mine's a little bit, maybe a little not reaching out so far, because I guess because I know my audience and they know theirs, but we're both reaching out, we're both intense. My show feels like a party. Theirs feels like intensity. So I guess we're going to, you know, at the end of the day, it's going to be an intense party.
That's good. Well, you need a little bit of the party in there as you're, you know, as you're speaking to people. That's good. Last question. Who do you think, I mean, if you just picked like three, whether it Christian or secular artists or whatever you want to call them, who's super talented out there? Just talent that you've seen. That's just amazing that you can't believe they do what they do.
I mean, there's amazingly talented people everywhere. I think the phrase amazing, I think John Mayer, obviously extremely talented. My son, True Dog, loves Jason Mraz, great songwriter. I love Jack Johnson. Mute Math is incredible. Matt Carney, Switchfoot, you know, my boy B. Wright. There's a lot of talent out there. Lecrae, mm-hmm. A rap artist. A lot of amazing talent out there, man. I mean, I think all the people I just named are quite impressive with the skills that and the creativity God's given them.
That's true. That's very true. So, and some of those we need to introduce to Jesus. So
yeah, absolutely.
Get them. I mean, and just be bold as we're in their circles. I mean, I love it. I just heard a pastor say this weekend, you know, there are a certain percentage of us, 5 to 8% of Christians are called to be evangelists, but the rest of us are called to be a witness. And there's a difference in how that plays out, but it doesn't make any of us less responsible. I think that's pretty cool.
Just got back from the Grammys and took my 11-year-old son, which was, you know, a risk. Mm-hmm. But I figure if he's going to experience some of that stuff, why not with Dad, you know? And, you know, we were there, and we were in the hotel, at the hotel called The Standard, which is a really intensely bizarre hotel. And he was like, Daddy, this is like the opposite of Franklin. Nice. Everything is really weird here. And it is a bizarre, you know, kind of really super modern, bizarre hotel. But we just sat in that room and prayed you know, ask God to give us an opportunity to be salt and light there. And I just thought it was great to experience that with him.
That's cool. Okay, everyone. Well, we're talking with Toby Mac. He can be found at tobymac.com. The album is Tonight. The current single is called City on Our Knees. And don't forget the tour as well, kicking off in March. I think you're kicking off in Aurora, Illinois. Tour going through April 11th, finishing up in Asheville, North Carolina. So those of you who are within that sphere, make sure you check it out and go see that. So thank you so much, Toby, for talking to us and being part of the Boundless Show. We have many, many fans that I put a little shout out on Facebook, and they all wanted me to say hello and, of course, you know, go visit their house whenever you get a chance. So
I'll be back for dinner. I'll bring the whole crew.
Yeah, you do that. So thanks again for joining us.
All right. Thank you. Be blessed. If you gotta start somewhere, why not here?
you gotta start sometime, why not now? If we gotta start somewhere, I say here. If we gotta start sometime, I say now. Through the fog, there is hope in the distance. From cathedrals to third world missions, love will fall to the earth like a crashing wave. Tonight's the night for the sinners and the saints to wear.
We are opening up this week's inbox, and I have Candace on the phone. Hey, Candace.
Hey, Lisa. Always a pleasure.
Always great to hear your wonderful voice, although I don't hear anything in the background, so I would appreciate if you would just quickly check on the kids and make sure they're still alive.
Well, the little ones are napping, so we have for about 3 minutes. So
you're good. Okay, well, then we have 3 minutes to help Nicole.
Okay, let's do it.
We're going to answer Nicole's question. She says, on Facebook, I got a friend request from the brother of a friend of mine. I accepted the request, even though I've never met him, and he lives on a different continent. He began talking to me on Facebook and was flirting with me, telling me how beautiful I am, and showing obvious interest. By the end of the conversation, he told me that he had fallen in love with me. I tried to politely tell him that he doesn't even know me, but he claimed that it was love at first sight when he saw my picture. It made me a little uncomfortable, and I quickly left the conversation. What does Scripture have to say about love at first sight? I don't know if I should believe this young man or not, and I've always kind of believed that love needs time to develop and grow over time as you get to know both the wonderful and the less great things about the person. If he really does have feelings for me, I don't want to take them lightly, but again, he lives very far away and doesn't really know me at all. What are your thoughts? And I'm going to just start out by saying, Nicole, we can answer this in 3 seconds, and that is, this guy is crazy, and you need to get away from him. But I'm sure Candace has more elucidating comments.
Well, you know, I have the deep biblical principle that is lust at first sight, right?
There you go.
No, I think there's attraction at first sight. You can be attracted to someone when you see their picture. And we know that Isaac was attracted to Rebecca when he first saw her. But we have to unpack the concept of love to say what is love, and especially what is biblical love. The kind of love that makes a good marriage takes a long time to develop, and it's not just a feeling, and a lot of times it's not a feeling at all. It's a decision, it's actions, it's sacrifice and laying down your life for your husband or wife, and you know, putting their needs ahead of yours. It's 1 Corinthians 13. It's patience and kindness and gentleness not keeping a record of wrongs and being willing to forgive and to ask for forgiveness. And so all of these things are not even remotely possible by looking at a picture.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's interesting. I mean, it does remind me of kind of my foray into the online dating world, which I'm still recovering from. But you would get into these. If someone could do a laying on of hands, I would appreciate it. But you would get into these conversations with guys, especially when you would get on like IM or something. And
right.
it would become very flirty. And I think you do kind of project your hopes and whatever and your best intentions about that person onto that conversation, and it's easy to get caught up in that.
Well, I'll tell you, the biggest drawback to online dating, and I'm a fan of it in certain forms, but whatever form you're using, whatever platform, whatever, you know, service, you always have the challenge of the first time meeting up in real life.
Mm-hmm.
That is so difficult because you can't help but project your expectations onto this person when all you're seeing of them is what they are thoughtfully presenting to you through email, through chat, through even through Skype or some sort of a video conference. You're still getting just the piece that they're wanting to present, and presumably they're presenting the best piece of themselves.
Right.
And so it really is like, even if you've had a year-long correspondence that has been so wonderful, I have a friend who did that, and she finally met the guy for the first time in real life, and it was the most disastrous weekend. And it was the last day of a three-day weekend. They were both ready to say this was a disaster. It was, you know, who were we kidding? This is ridiculous. They were driving to the last event of the last day and got into this massive car accident that totaled the car, and it was a miracle they weren't killed. And it was the breaking of the glass that finally broke the ice for them.
Oh,
and they're married, and they have three kids, and they're happily married, and they're great. But it really took this sort of dramatic experience to shake them out of all those expectations, to bring them into the present, and to give them something that they had in common that they could then focus on. It was just such an interesting turn of events for them.
Well, yeah, and we certainly don't recommend that for people as
no.
you are meeting someone.
Thankfully, there are easier ways
do not run into
to break
a tree.
The ice, but I think it illustrates the point that you have to be so careful when you do start a relationship this way not to put too much into the expectations and into the you know, what you imagine this person to be.
Right.
That's why talking to other people who know them in real life can be really helpful.
Sure. So what would you say, Candace, that Nicole needs to look for then? I mean, if this guy is just, you know, going on and he's so flattering and he's so whatever. I mean, obviously, he's a long distance away. She alludes to that.
Right.
She's never met him in person. He's a brother of a friend, whatever. There's no real other connection there.
Right.
What does she need to see if this guy's really serious?
Well, she first needs to start out by letting him know that the picture that he fell in love with happened to be that I look like so-and-so in Hollywood picture from that last, you know, 3 weeks ago on Facebook that everybody was doing.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't really her, it was Bette Midler.
The doppelganger. Yeah.
Right, and after he realizes, no. I think, you know, if there's any potential here, it would begin by just asking the friend, the sister.
Yeah.
Hey, what's up with your brother? Is he serious? Does he do this a lot? You know,
is he crazy?
Can you help me out here? If he seems like a normal person based on someone you trust's recommendation, then I think she could probably back off the chat, start with an email, and just say, hey, you know, I'd be happy and willing to get to know you, but your initial reaction made me a little uncomfortable, and I'm a lot more than my looks, and I would want to, you know, form a friendship.
Yeah. I would say, too, that this is a good time to evaluate, practically speaking, where they are on a number of different issues. Because I know friends that I've had, and even myself, when you get into these chat situations or meeting guys online, all of a sudden it's like, well, we don't agree on anything theologically, but surely we both have Jesus. Yeah. Surely we both have Jesus and we like to hike. And
yeah.
So that's going to be enough. And so, you know, it's a good when she has that distance to look and say, would this even be a feasible
right.
match?
Definitely. Definitely start asking the hard questions now. You have nothing to lose.
Exactly. Yeah. So, well, that's good. Candace, thanks for weighing in on that. Incidentally, I was told on that whole doppelganger thing.
Yeah.
Someone here at work told me that I look like Kat Von D, who is on like a show called Miami Ink, and she is like a tattoo artist and is full of tats. But I am going to take it because I do like her.
That's the one I gave you, isn't it?
That is not the one you gave me. No,
I know. I gave you a different one that you didn't like either.
Bless the Lord. Well, this one, she actually she's kind of like tough and cool. I like
her. Okay. Well, that's probably more accurate then.
Okay. Well, I'm going to
go. You don't need to go get the tats, all right?
I'm going to skip those. So I already have the skull iPhone case, so I'm good. So, well, thank you, Candace, for joining us for this question. Love it. Thanks for your input.
You are welcome. It's always my pleasure.
Yay. All right, folks, that's it for this week's show. As always, we want to hear from you. Write to us, editor@boundless.org. Just write to us, give us question ideas, or quite frankly, just tell us who your doppelganger picture is. Ted wants to just wade through those and read them. I love throwing out random things and solicitations for commentary. That's awesome. So, but more importantly, we want to hear where you are in life and what's going on in your life. We love to hear from you. We want you to visit as well. We're heading into spring. I'm so excited about it. La, la, la. Just finished my sinus surgery. I just have a new lease on life. So write to us, editor@boundless.org, and I will see you around next week for The Boundless Show.
The Boundless Show is a production of boundless.org. Focus on the family.